And away we go on this Wednesday, August the 28th, 2019, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into The Early Show right here on WWGH Radio, and we have got a great show ahead of you today. Now, first hour, we're going to do something we have accustomed to doing every year here on this station. I believe we've done it for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's always a big, popular segment to do each year. And this year may be more interesting than in past years. As everybody knows, one of the most popular publications that comes out every year is the Old Farmer's Almanac. Well, as of this week, the 2020 edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac is available on the internet and retailers all across this country. And this morning we are going to talk about the 2020 edition with the assistant editor of the 2020 Old Farmer's Almanac, Tim Clark. Tim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
Doing well. Tim, I noticed that the headlines this week, matter of fact, even last night, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was telling him that we were going to have you on this morning, and he said, "Oh man, I heard it's going to be a bad winter."
Well, we think it's going to be snowy in Ohio, that's for sure.
Were you surprised that that was the big headline that most periodicals picked up on when the almanac was released?
Well, not really, Scott. You know, we have a competitor in Maine called the Farmer's Almanac. We are older. That's why we're the Old Farmer's Almanac. But they came out on Monday with their forecast, and in recent years they've been using very heightened, dramatic language. You know, it's going to be bone-chilling cold, blizzards every other day, that kind of thing. We've never gone quite for that much drama. But some of our business advisors suggested maybe we should use more dramatic language, so we've edged over a little bit into the sensationalization of weather, which bothers me a little bit. But you know, if that's what you have to do to succeed in this very crowded media environment, I guess that's what we'll do. But our forecast really is for more snow than usual in the Ohio region.
Now, in recent years, it's kind of been interesting, and I especially remember 2016 when we had 75 degrees on Christmas Eve, which I had never seen before. You know, we've had nice temperatures in December, but nothing like that on Christmas Eve. And, you know, the last couple years, 2017, 2018, were not as snowy as I remember them being when I was younger. But this year could be the year here in Ohio, is what you're saying.
That's right, although you're right that it's been warmer. And it's a very controversial thing to talk about, you know, climate change. But here's why we are predicting a warmer than normal winter, in spite of the fact that you're getting a lot of snow. As you know, the amount of snow you get really depends on the temperature, because if it's warm enough, then the snow doesn't fall as snow, it falls as rain. But we think the combinations are going to be just about right for snow in Ohio. We use a system based, we're 228 years old now. I'm very proud of that. I'd like to say that when we put out our first edition in 1792, the President of the United States was a Virginia farmer named Washington. And he didn't live in the White House because the White House hadn't been built yet. So we've gone out continuously every year since then, which makes us the oldest continuously published periodical in North America, a record, in fact, we've held since the early 1800s. And there's no doubt that in the last few years, temperatures have been warm. You may have noticed that this last July was considered by some the hottest month in the recorded history of the world. The strange thing is that our system for long-range forecasting, which is based on the solar cycle, which is about an 11-year recurring rise and fall in solar energy reaching the atmosphere, is at the lowest point in quite a long time. That should mean we'd be getting cooler weather, but we're getting warmer weather. So it's confusing and a little worrisome because, as we say up here in Dublin, New Hampshire, where we do the almanac, if we're getting this much heat in a down period in the solar cycle, what happens when we reach an up period in the solar cycle where we expect it to be warmer? How hot is it going to get? So it's a time for people who are interested in climate to be thinking hard. We have a terrific story in this year's edition about the effect on the Arctic and the warmth in the Arctic. It has tremendous effects on those of us living in middle latitudes. I'm sure you've heard of the Arctic vortex, which is a kind of ring of high-speed winds that corral the really cold weather around the North Pole and hold it there. But in the last couple of years, it's been so warm in the eastern Pacific that this tongue of really warm air has gone right up through Alaska, giving Alaska some of the warmest temperatures they've ever had. It's melted a lot of the Arctic sea ice. It's down as low as it's ever been recorded. And it has weakened that Arctic vortex that allows cold air then to spill out, going south, crossing Canada, crossing the middle of the United States, and giving us some unusually cold temperatures. It only happens every now and then. It's not that it's cold all the time. As I say, we've been having warmer than normal winters, but I'm sure you remember some of the temperatures in places like Louisiana, you know, hard frosts in Louisiana coming from this spilling out of the Arctic air caused by warm air pushing it out. So if you're a meteorologist, it's a lot of interesting stuff going on, and we have this article talking about that. What comes next? Harder than ever to tell.
You know, Tim, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do think it's an important topic to discuss when you leave the politics and everything out of it. Mm-hmm. We had a climate specialist on back earlier this year, maybe 6 months ago, and the theory on this global warming, which she wasn't really thrilled with that title, because that's not really what it is. It's more about climate change.
Right.
But essentially, the idea was that for years we were told that, yes, the climate's changing, but it's not going to happen in our lifetime. Even if it does happen, it's more about your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids. And when I talked to her earlier this year, she said, now, if nothing is done, if we continue the way we continue, we're talking 10 to 15 years. That blew my mind. Is the Old Farmer's Almanac kind of that school, or where do you guys stand on that? You're a meteorologist.
Well, we stand on a foundation of looking at the solar cycle, looking at this rise and fall of solar energy, which has done well for us over 228 years. But as I said a few minutes ago, we're perplexed this year and last year because these should have been cooler than normal years according to our system, and they certainly haven't been. So something's going on. We're not sure what's causing it, but there's no doubt that it's warmer. There's no doubt that this warm air in the eastern Pacific is moving into the Arctic, melting the sea ice. And once that starts to happen, you get into these feedback effects. If you melt much of the sea ice, it lowers the albedo, which means the reflectivity of the Arctic surface. And that means more solar energy can be absorbed by the sea, which warms up the sea, and that melts more ice. So the whole thing kind of starts to snowball, if you'll forgive the expression. We're watching it. When you've been around 228 years, you can afford to take your time and examine things carefully. And there have been occasions in the past when the solar cycle kind of stopped for a while and temperatures got very cold. So it's not like a machine that we can guarantee the cycle will be the same every 11 years. There was a time back in the early, late 17th and early 18th century called the Maunder Minimum, after an astronomer who noticed that the number of sunspots, which are a symptom of solar activity, just fell away to nothing. And the temperatures fell radically, so much so that people were walking on the Thames River. It was frozen hard in London, which hasn't happened since. Perhaps something like that is creeping up on us. I don't think it's anything anyone needs to panic about. Even when weather's warmer than normal, you get snow in the winter. That's what winter weather means. As I said, we expect more snow than normal in Ohio this coming winter. People can't depend on climate change to allow them to spend a lot of time at the beach in December. Unless you're in one of the places where it's, you know, far south and you've gone down there for your vacation. As you say, wisely, I think, we're trying to avoid the politics of it. We're trying to look hard at the science of it and see if we can make it jibe with our traditional methods of forecasting. And last year we did really well. We got right at about 80%. That's been our traditional claim for accuracy. That's not 80% of our forecast being correct to the day. Nobody can do that. It really measures the direction of change for both precipitation and temperature for each month. So if we say it's going to be warmer in December, and we are saying you're going to have an unusually warm December in Ohio, and it turns out after the fact that it was warmer, we call that a correct guess, even if it's much warmer than we predicted or not as warm as we predicted. We're predicting about an average 5-degree increase in the average temperature for Ohio this coming December. That's a big change. I look at the daily forecast and I see the word mild popping up a lot, although it does say there's going to be some snow around Christmas, so you might even get a white Christmas.
So when we talk about having a warmer than normal winter, the winter of 2020, is there a point in winter, maybe after, well, I guess it's not really winter yet, but when the cold temperatures come in, October, November, December, what does that part of winter in Ohio look like as opposed to the dead of winter, which we call it January, February, and March?
Well, I've got my 2020 almanac in front of me. Let me look at what the monthly predictions are. Starting in November, which is our first one that we have, November of 2019 is how we start the 2020 forecast, and that goes back to 1792 because a farmer wanted to know what the whole year was going to be like so he could buy the right amount of seed and prepare diligently for the coming year. We think it's the temperature is going to be 2 degrees below average, not a big change. Precipitation, about an inch above average where you are. You're in region 6, we call the Lower Lakes, which goes all the way from Syracuse, New York in the east to Milwaukee and Chicago in the west. Marion's sort of slightly west of center of that area. For December, we're looking at 4 degrees above average, and that's pretty substantial. And as I said, 5 degrees above average in January, 3 above in February, and you have to go all the way to March before you find our prediction to be below average temperatures. And unsurprisingly, the only time we use the word snowstorm in the forecast for this winter is in late March.
That's it. So when we talk about more snow, possibly a white Christmas we're talking about, not really sure at this point, but how much snow are we talking over the winter months, and when are we going to see the first snow? Do we know when that might happen?
Well, we don't know anything. We know what we predict. So let me see where we use the word first. Okay, very early in November. We've got between the 4th and the 9th, we're predicting rain changing to snow. We also have periods of rain and snow between the 14th and 25th in November. But as I say, there's also an awful lot of rain. It's going to be a stormy winter, and whether that's going to take the form of snow or rain will depend on very, very slight temperature gradient changes, depending on the dates. And all of that is kind of keeping an eye on the west, because we think this year there's going to be a virtual parade of storms crossing the country from the Pacific Northwest right through the Great Lakes to the east, and perhaps as many as 7 big snowstorms. But we're not absolutely sure when they're going to happen. This is our best prediction.
Now, early in the year 2020, January, February, March, is that when it looks like there's going to be above average snowfalls? Because it looks like November and December, not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. The snowiest periods, we think, are going to be early to mid-January, and then from late January into early February, and then in late February into early March, and even, as I said, one big storm at the very end of March. But that's going to give way to a warmer-than-normal spring, we think, April and May. And summer, we think, will be hot and rainy. Sizzle and drizzle is the terms we used on our map.
Now, does it look like we're going to get warm temperatures at the beginning of April, or kind of like this year, is it going to hold off a little bit until May?
Well, we're predicting the average temperature to be about 2 degrees below average, which is not frigid. You know, that's just a little cooler. It does say sunny and cold for the first week of April, a few showers, turning warm by about the 12th, more showers and thunderstorms. So it looks like it's not going to be a big change right away, but we are saying that May is going to be 5 degrees above average for the month, and that's a considerable change. So as I look at the daily forecast, I see a lot of the word warm and thunderstorms and very warm and more thunderstorms. And as you know, the combination of warm temperature and the change the length of the day, you start to have thunderstorms popping up in the afternoons and evenings. So I'd say the first time you're going to really feel the difference of spring will be, look like it's in May.
You know, Tim, it's kind of interesting because when we started talking about using sensationalized terms to describe winter, the Old Farmer's Almanac has stayed away from that in past years. How did that decision come about this year to maybe change that a little bit?
Well, I think we just felt like we were getting a little drab, you know. And if our competition is moving to that sensational language, it's very tempting to kind of follow along. As I said, it bothers me. I think we're already over-dramatizing weather. It seems like every time there's a snowstorm forecast, the big weather predictors go kind of nuts, and they give it a name, and it's called Snowpocalypse or Snowpalooza, and it's all entertainment. You know, there's sort of Hollywood values here. The weather, although it's changing, and may change a lot in the next century, is not all that different from that of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. I used to joke a lot about, you know, the Old Farmer's Almanac forecast is always the same. We predict the weather will be cold in the winter, warmer in the spring, hot in the summer, and cool off in the fall. And that's pretty much what happens every year. As I say, I may be old-fashioned. I don't think we ought to. Weather is endlessly entertaining, of course. You know, it's what we talk about every day. What would we talk about if we didn't have weather to talk about? But it's getting to the point, I think, where we're scaring people. We're making their lives more anxious, when in fact it's just snow. You know, it may pile up. It may cause inconvenience for a while, but it's going to melt. Summer will come again. That's one of the purposes of an almanac, by the way. It's an old, old word that comes from the Arabic. You can tell by that A-L beginning, you know, like Al Jazeera. And it means a calendar of the heavens. And in the same sense that Stonehenge, the great stones in a circle in southern England, helped those people who built them to predict the end of winter and the coming of spring and summer. An almanac, you keep this little yellow book in your kitchen, hang it from a string on a nail, is a reminder that pretty much things remain the same. There's a lot of variation from day to day and week to week and month to month. But from year to year, you know, the winter's going to be cold. The spring's going to warm up. It's going to get hot in the summer, and it's going to be cooling off in the fall. So there's not so much that people should be terrified of or anxious about.
You know, Tim, people love to hear about this every year because the Old Farmer's Almanac, as you said in the beginning, dates back to the 1700s before the White House was built. How did this all get started? Who started it? And what has kind of been the trajectory ever since?
Well, it's a little known fact that in 1792, when we began, there were more almanacs being published in America than there were newspapers. It was an indispensable part of every household. It used to say that every household in America in the late 18th century had to have at least two books, the Bible and an almanac, because it was an essential tool for farmers. So when Robert B. Thomas, a young schoolmaster and book publisher and book binder from central Massachusetts, wanted to move into a better paying business, he decided to put out his own almanac. And he actually moved to Boston for a few weeks to study under a guy named Carlton Osgood, who was a famous mathematician of the time. And he taught him how to do the calculations for sunrise and sunset and the inclination and declination of the stars and planets. But that was enough, a couple of weeks of tutoring, and he could put out his own almanac. But he wanted his to be different from most of the almanacs available. Robert B. Thomas, an educated man, wanted a scientific instrument, a kind of handheld computer for the modern farmer. And he ruthlessly took out all of the trappings of astrology and superstition that were featured in most of the other almanacs. I studied Shakespeare at the Folger Shakespeare Library about 10 years ago. I went down, I was teaching English at the time, and got a scholarship to spend a month there. And it was fascinating to read genuine publications of the 16th century, including an almanac. It was an English almanac. And I studied it carefully, and it really made me laugh out loud, because so much of it reminded me of the stuff we do today in the Old Farmer's Almanac. Funny stories, jokes, riddles, bizarre bits of history, advice on food and health. And a lot of it was, as I say, based on superstition. I remember, for example, that there was a part that said what the significance of thunder was on depending on what day you heard it. And what stuck in my head was that thunder on Wednesdays signified and was an omen of the death of harlots. So any of your harlots in your radio audience, it is a Wednesday, they should watch out for any thunder.
You know, it's interesting that there were so many almanacs around back then, and now so few, really, when you think about it. Why has
There's
this
still
one...
still some around. Europe has some, too. Europe has some almanacs that are much older than ours. There's one called Old Moors that was published in Ireland for a long time, probably 1,000 years old.
Why has this one survived here in America?
It's a great question. It's a question we ponder all the time. It didn't hurt that Robert B. Thomas was the editor of the Almanac for 50 years. And that consistency and the good work he did and the familiarity of his voice, you know, we editors like to talk about a writer having a voice, and successful publications have a voice too. It's familiar. You read it and you think, yeah, that's right. That's what the Almanac should sound like. So he had half a century to establish that voice and that familiarity. That's one thing. I think another reason is that one of his favorite mottos, we have it still on the cover of our publication, that the Old Farmer's Almanac is useful with a pleasant degree of humor. So useful is terribly important. And every year you look at the new almanac and you find there's recipes, there's gardening advice, there's advice on caring for your pets. But there's also funny stories. And we try not to take ourselves too seriously. We take our work very seriously, but we try not to take ourselves too seriously. So if we can add a smile or a chuckle to the day, in addition to the information about what's happening in the sky and the weather and how to, you know, what the best vegetables to grow are. This year we have a big feature on dwarf tomatoes. I got a bunch of them in my front yard garden. Then we're doing our job and we're maintaining our voice and we're maintaining a personal connection to our audience. I used to do this kind of interview by traveling around the country, and I'd go all the cities and small towns and visit the radio stations. And one thing I noticed that made me very happy was that whenever I announced myself as being Tim Clark from the Old Farmer's Almanac, people would smile. Whatever we may be as a publication, whatever our voice may be, it's not a threatening one, and it's not one that makes people worry. And so this kind of ties into all we were talking about earlier about climate change. It's serious. It's something we need to pay attention to. It's something we may need to change some of the ways we live. But we're not here to frighten people. And we don't think people need to be frightened. I wrote a piece for the Almanac many years ago. I've been here 40 years now. I can't believe it. I'm the guy who puts the old in the Old Farmer's Almanac. But I wrote a piece called Doomsday, Is It Ever Going to Come? And I one of the people I read on the subject was the Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Barbara Tuchman. And she said that the doomsday curve never reaches its conclusion because somewhere along the line, people start to notice the problem and turn their attention to it and change things so that we don't arrive at doomsday. That I find very reassuring.
That's very interesting. Tim, how is the almanac put together every year? When is it? When does it start, and what is the process?
Well, it starts early. I can assure you that because I'm finishing up a story for the 2021 almanac right now, and we're just coming out with the 2020. And we're planning the 2022 almanac. So it's a little hard to remember what year you're living in at the almanac office. But I would say that we begin, say, 2 or even 3 years in advance by thinking about what are we going to want to talk about in that 2022 almanac. Because we like to do a lot of history, we look for significant anniversaries. You know, what happened 100 years ago, 200 years ago? Is it something we can put together a new story about? So we start assigning writers to write about stuff like that. The folks at AccuWeather, who help us out with the forecasts, they use our 228-year-old formula, so the forecast they do for us is very different from the one they do for themselves. But they need to get the data and start putting those numbers together. One of the things I specialize in and have for more than 30 years is the weather doggerel. Now, doggerel is an old English word that means not exactly poetry, but verse, light verse. Let's see, an example of doggerel everyone would know would be roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. You know, it's not going to win any prizes for literature, but we all know that stuff. So I get the advance forecast for the coming year in January. This coming January, I will get from AccuWeather the forecast for the year 2021. And I will start writing the doggerel, which is an unusual assignment because it runs down the side of our calendar pages, usually only one word per line for the month. So the doggerel is 12 poems, none of them shorter than 28 lines or longer than 31 lines, that are supposed to be funny and rhyme and reflect the New England forecast, just the New England forecast, because that's where we began. And I turn that in. And so you find yourself, I find myself looking for a new rhyme for drizzle. You know, it's easy to do rain and sleet and snow, but it's tough to find some of these things to talk about. And I've done that for 30-some years. So that's a piece of the past, because the doggerel was in the first edition in 1792. Didn't rhyme, but it did have, and some of it was sort of obvious. I mean, I think one of the very first bits of the doggerel in that first edition was, looks like snow. Well, it was January in New England. What did you think it would look like?
That's right. Yeah, Tim, when everything is brought together, who makes the decision? How is the decision made? What stays in? What doesn't make it in? How does that process take form?
Well, it's a small editorial group. There's only 8 editors in all, and I'm just part-time. I've been there a long time, but I'm scaling back at this point. And our editor-in-chief, Janice Stillman, who is the 13th of all the editors of the Old Farmer's Almanac and the first woman, she looks at stuff as it comes in. She sends it back to writers for more work or refuses it. We keep reading stuff that people send us unsolicited because you never know when some gem is going to turn up. And she always orders more than we can use. You have to do that in order to make sure you have enough good stuff. So somewhere gets towards the end of summer of the year before, she's made her decision. Then she pulls out the stuff we can't use, arranges the stuff we can, and that depends on the sales of advertising. We are an advertising revenue-supported publication. You can't subscribe to the Almanac. You can buy it at the newsstand. You can buy it at bookstores. You can buy it off the Internet. But we don't know from year to year how many copies we're going to sell, except by looking in the past and saying, well, we sold about 3 million copies last year. Let's cross our fingers and hope that we sell another 3 million this year. So it's a slow process. There's a lot of changes right up to the deadline, which usually comes about the 1st of August. And then it's off to the printer.
And, you know, that's an interesting thing. Obviously, we don't know right now what the sales will be like for the 2020 Almanac, but were the sales for the 2019 Almanac on par with what they had been in the past?
Yes, they were. We are very grateful and blessed to be continuing to sell a paper product at a time when magazines and newspapers are suffering. And I think one of the reasons we've succeeded at that, and this is actually part of the answer to your earlier question, what keeps us alive 228 years later, is that we were fairly early adopters of the Internet and online and social media. You know, we have a presence on Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest and many of the other social media. You can order almanacs through our website, almanac.com. So we didn't just hide our head in the sand. And I think that's characteristic right back to Robert B. Thomas. He paid attention to what was going on. In fact, one of my favorite Robert B. Thomas quotes is that in the alphabet of farming, A is attention. I was on a TV show in Canada a couple of years ago, and somebody said, what's the secret of the old farmer's almanac? And I said, pay attention. Two words gives you the secret of the old farmer almanac success. Pay attention to everything. Pay attention to the sky. Pay attention to the land. Pay attention to the wind and what the clouds look like and the precipitation. Pay attention to those sunspots on the sun. Pay attention, because farming isn't easy. And farmers have to have a lot of things under their eyes, because there's an awful lot about farming that you have no control over whatsoever. You know, you can't control the weather. You can try to predict it. You can try to plan for it. But if it doesn't rain, you're going to fail. Crops are going to fail. You have to be ready with the next option. I can't tell you how much my admiration for farmers has increased in the 30, 40 years I've been working here. And also, my admiration in general for people who lived 228 years ago. It's awfully easy for us to say, oh, well, they weren't very bright. You know, they believed a lot of stuff that we know is not true. But farmers have managed to survive in hostile environments for thousands of years. And whenever anybody says to me, well, aren't a lot of that stuff, you know, I'm sort of the folklore editor, and I do stories about folklore, and people say, isn't that just old wives' tales? And I said, yes, it is. But, you know, I know a lot of old wives. I'm married to one of them, as a matter of fact. And they're really smart people.
What do you think, aside from the forecast, is the biggest driver of sales for the Old Farmer's Almanac?
Well, I'm not sure a marketing manager would agree with me, but I think it's nostalgia. I think there's something very reassuring about seeing the yellow cover coming out every fall. We've discovered by measuring our audience and sending out questionnaires and putting together focus groups that most of our readers have some kind of family connection to the almanac. Their parents got it. Their grandparents got it. They live, for the most part, in states with an agricultural history and still have strong agricultural leanings. I've always felt that one of the best things the Old Farmer's Almanac can say to people is pay attention, but don't worry. Don't be frantic. The earth will support us if we treat the earth with respect. And so it's not very jazzy, it's not very spectacular, but we seem to stay alive through this warm feeling that people have towards the Old Farmer's Almanac.
About how many copies of the 2019 edition were sold across shelves across the country?
About 3 million.
3 million.
That's the number we aim for. We like to increase it, and it's been doing okay. Not growing by leaps and bounds, but then can you think of anything that's 228 years old that's growing by leaps and bounds?
Not to my knowledge. That's a pretty good record. Tim, I do have a weather question here, because one of the people at the station is actually the creator of Ohio's weather forecasting groundhog Buckeye Chuck, Charlie Evers, here at the station, who's been in broadcasting for about 70 years now. And he talks a lot about the heat index in the wind chill, which they talk about an awful lot now on weather forecasts. You know, it feels like this, it feels like that. And he's not really a fan of those terms, especially the heat index. What do you make of those terms, which have crept in the last 30 years?
Well, I think we're sort of on his side. We acknowledge them. If you get the premium edition, which costs an extra dollar and contains an extra 36 pages, those 36 pages will include things like how to measure wind chill, how to measure heat index, and so forth. It's not that they don't exist, but, yeah, you know, it's hot, it's cold, it's... You can cut this thing down too fine, you know? You can measure it to too finicky a degree, and it's not going to help all that much. I always sound like an old fogey when I talk about this stuff, and I guess I am an old fogey. But somebody asked me the other day in a very worried tone about snowstorms and blizzards and so forth coming up this year, and I said, look, it's winter. It snows in winter. Calm down.
That's right. That's the best advice. It's Ohio. It's the Midwest. We're going to have mm-hmm. snow, and that's the way it's going to be. Is there anything that was in the original almanac, or are there several things that remain in today's almanac? Stories, recipes, things of that nature?
Yes. The answer is yes to all three of those things. We don't repeat the same recipes, but the very first edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac had a recipe in it. It was much shorter. It was only about 36 pages. We're up to 260 or so now. It had ads. It had the what we call the calendar pages, the right-hand pages that show that's where the doggerel is. It has the farmer's calendar essays, which are basically saying to farmers, this is the time of year you should be paying attention to this, in the early almanac. Not so much now, because only 2% of the American population actually works in agriculture, big agriculture. But more than 75% grow vegetables in gardens and flowers. And so we give more advice, I would say, to gardeners now than to farmers. Although we do like to pay attention to what's going on. We've run, the last 3 years, we've run a series of who are the modern farmers and how are they changing to respond to the forces and changes that affect them. I'll go along. I have no doubt whatsoever that if Robert B. Thomas could be summoned back to our time and I showed him a copy of the 2020 Almanac, he would recognize the publication. For one thing, his face is on the cover.
He'd like that. I think that'd be a positive. Tim, before we let you go, one thing that's very interesting to me is that this almanac has been around for such a long time. There are so many things that are very traditional about it, but yet we have seen one of the biggest changes in the world in the last 20 years, and that has been the advent of the internet and texting and social media. How has that changed the almanac, or has it?
We got on board as early as we could. We have a website, almanac.com. You can order our products there. You can see the weather forecasts. You can read a lot of the stories we've done. We're on Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and so forth. It's a terribly important source of income for us these days, too. We're very often highly ranked on Google as being a source of information and a lot of people reading it. This is modernity. This is the business that we're in now. The business is not paper almanacs exclusively. It's information. Information, but I would always add reassurance. I think that's a terribly important part of the appeal of the almanac. It says, in spite of the sometimes frightening changes and products that we hear, I was just reading an article this morning in the New Yorker magazine about some people who are really scared about what the internet has done to and is doing to our social relations and our kids and so forth. There are certain things that have a positive effect. I guess I'd be really happy if the almanac's existence was a net positive to families and individuals and farmers and really everybody. And that's a grandiose claim, but I think there's something to that. I know that, as I said before, wherever I travel and introduce myself as being from the Old Farmer's Almanac, the first reaction is a smile.
Mm. The 2020 edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac is on sale now, dating back to before the White House in the 1700s. We've been chatting with Tim Clark, the assistant editor who has been around with the Old Farmer's Almanac for about 40 years. Tim, thank you so much for the time. This is always an enlightening segment every year.
Thank you, Scott. I always enjoy talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tim Clark, the Old Farmer's Almanac. We're going to take a break, come back with much more. Don't you dare go anyway. Oh, my goodness. Warmer winter, more snow. We'll see what happens.
On WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 42 Marion Road. Telephone number 740-225-2000.